Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, another edition of our draft series. We're doing tight ends and the offensive line today. I'm Alfredo Arteaga, Simon Clancy is here, Chris Kaufman is here. And as always, this show is brought to you for you out-of-staters by Prize Picks. Go to Prize Picks. Use the promo code 5, F-I-V-E. You deposit $100, you get $100. And if you go to betteredge.com/5 reasons, you get $20 just for signing up. All right, I think we could separate tight ends into day one and day two. I'll start with day one, Brock Bowers, Simon Clancy. Your thoughts on how good a prospect this is. I have my own ideas. I think he's a fabulous prospect. I remember last year when there was a lot of good prospects and everybody's getting that time machine again. And I understand everybody likes Sam Laporta, but I believe Brock Bowers is a superior prospect to Sam Laporta. We saw what he produced. How good is Brock Bowers, Simon Clancy?
I mean, he's very good, but I think he has limitations, and I think he's had a very weird off season. We've not seen him work out. We've not seen him run. He's undersized. He's 6'4", in the 230s or the low 240s, water weight 240s. You can't envisage him as an effective Y because against bigger defenders, he can get engulfed. I mean, and you mentioned Sam Laporta, and I think that Bowers' usage will come in the same way that Ben Johnson used Laporta. And they use Brock Wright and Jeff Swain to block the bigger 3 and 5 techniques and allow Laporta to run routes. And I think that's what a smart offensive coordinator will do with Bowers. Let's not forget he's the first ever back-to-back winner of the Mackey Award. He's an incredible matchup threat for the right offensive coordinator. He's superb with the ball in his hands and he creates explosive plays. The inline blocking is okay. It's a work in progress. The thing that would concern me, and I think you get the sense, Chris, I don't know if you feel this, but you get the sense that he's slipping a little bit. And, the Jets feels like the first point of call at 10 or 11, whichever the Jets pick at. Maybe the Bengals at 18. But there are some significant injury issues that he's had. And, these are not just... he broke his arm. He broke his leg. He had shoulder surgery to repair a torn labrum. He has had tightrope surgery on his ankle. He had significant high ankle sprain. These things kind of mount up, and in a body that doesn't, we saw that picture of him kind of geeking out of the combine where he looks like some weird stamp collector at a stamp collector's festival. He is a devastating player. He is a fascinatingly interesting player, but I don't necessarily think he will suit all types, and that's okay. Where I do think he would suit would be, with the Miami Dolphins. I mean, I think he would be a perfect fit for somebody like Mike McDaniel, who would utilize him more on vertical routes as a YISO more than he was used that way with the Bulldogs, Chris.
Yeah, he's having a very strange offseason, almost like you'd accuse him of being at a position of a higher premium because of the way he's not worked out and the way that he's, no combine, not even the Georgia Pro Day. He had his own Pro Day with Amarius Mims, and I thought I heard somewhere, I mean, he certainly didn't time at that Pro Day. I heard that he ran basically like 15 routes. That's it at that special pro day. I mean, it's no Senior Bowl. It's really weird for a guy that plays a declining position to have that sort of pre-draft season, I guess you call it. No doubt that he's really good, and I think that's the problem is that what people separate or have trouble separating is, yes, he's really good at the position, but also how impactful is the position now? Because the instances you're running into nowadays of having a Travis Kelce, or a George Kittle are getting fewer and farther between now. And just when you think you've got some unicorn like Kyle Pitts, what happens to Kyle Pitts? He's not exactly lighting things up. And then it becomes a coach killer. It's like, oh, the coach's fault or the quarterback's fault, and it's like, at the end of the day, I think that there's a formula in the NFL as far as who becomes the most productive in the passing game. And it is the guys that can move the fastest and the quickest and run out in space. And those are wide receivers. And so you're looking at a guy who is going to be a move tight end, who is, more of a, as you said, he's not going to line up at Y, straight up Y, and take on these, five techniques and stuff as much. But if he's going to line up there, then what does that mean? It means that you have to have a tight end, either if there is only one tight end on the field and he's one of them, then he has to be detached from the formation, or otherwise lined up in a position where he's got some space. And that carries a lot of implications for what kinds of plays that you can call. I think that, if you're calling the offense that Jonnu Smith helped run in Tennessee back before he shook free of the Titans, then that worked. That works. But if you're looking at, say, Travis Kelce as an example, well, one of the reasons Travis Kelce is so good is because of the chemistry between he and Patrick Mahomes. And you wonder if, one could really be one without the other. Because of that tight chemistry and that communication and the way things works, because Travis Kelce is everything that he's known for is his ability to shake free, and do what the defense is not predicting that he's going to do, and just be on the same page with the quarterback that way. What do you have? What do you really have with a Brock Bowers? You have a very, very, very good player at his position, but what is his position now? What is the value of that position now? And I think that there's kind of a lot of screaming and like kind of a lot of denial that the position is getting to be as not valuable as it is. But those are the facts. That's the way it is. And so and if you're, let's say you're thinking about taking him with a top 10 pick, number 10 pick, the Jets. Let's say that there's a choice between Rome Odunze and Brock Bowers. The franchise tag for a wide receiver costs something like $20 million. The franchise tag for a tight end costs something like $13 million. The number 10 pick is only going to get, something like, I forget what it was, like $4 million a year or something like that. So if you end up getting a Rome Odunze and he's a, elite caliber at his position, franchise taggable type of player, then on that cost control, that all important cost controlled rookie contract, you're going to be saving like $16 million a year or something along those lines. Well, with the tight end position, what are you really saving? You're saving more like, $8 million a year or something along those lines. I don't know the exact numbers. So you have to think about that. You really have to think about that. Like, are you twice as sure that Brock Bowers is elite at his position as you are that Rome Odunze is at his? And that's the question that you're going to come up with. And it does feel like Simon mentioned, if you get past that crucible at number 10, where everybody thinks that Brock is going to the Jets, which I don't think that's going to happen, then how far does he fall down? How far does he go? And if you're Miami, how far does he get before you start getting a little antsy and you say, well, maybe I can trade one of those third rounders in 2025. Or the only one that they have that's able to be traded right now, but knowing that they should have a couple of them, you know, and make it happen. But it's a real conundrum.
And all right, last thing on Brock Bowers before we move on. What is the likelihood, Simon, and I'll get you in here, Chris, as well. What's the likelihood that he is the best player available at 21, and it's one of those situations where there is no debate? Just run up there, hand in the card. We don't care what offensive tackle is up there, what linebacker, wide receiver, whatever. He is the BPA for Miami at 21. What is the likelihood of that?
I think there's a fair likelihood. I mean, that's quite a hard question. You know, would Byron Murphy still be on the board? Would Jared Verse be still on the board? How do you marry those prospects up in terms of, you know, I feel very nervous about the fact that he's done nothing this off season. I feel very nervous about that. You know, not run any routes really, not done any of the testing. You know, he's going to enter the NFL. Nobody's really going to know, you know, what he runs, what he, and that's fine. You know, you look at the tape and the tape is great, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, there is a reason why, you know, we can all get a bit carried away with these sorts of things, but there is a reason why these kids test and they are measured and they do all the explosive testing, all those sorts of things. It's a bit of a how long is a piece of string question, because you just don't know who else is going to be on the board. But he certainly would be up there, Chris, wouldn't he? He'd certainly be one of the guys who would be the best player available. And in terms of schematically and how he'd fit the Dolphins, and specifically Mike McDaniel, then you could make a pretty legitimate case that he would be the best player available.
Yeah, I think most people in Miami or around Miami or fans of Miami, you know, media and so on and so forth, would probably just run up to turn in the card at 21 if he were available. Certainly polls that we've conducted, you know, on OnlyFans and such have suggested the same. And I do think the position, I mean, getting toward 21 overall is a little bit different than picking number 10 overall. And at that point, you know, yes, there is still position considerations, but you also marry up the fit with the Mike McDaniel offense, and just the simple fact that the Dolphins are kind of begging for a really good third option in the passing game aside from Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, and they've been struggling to find that, you know, just speaking broadly, and there you have it. There it is, you know, sitting right in front of you, and it couldn't be more seemingly perfect than that. So yeah, I do believe the Dolphins would go after him if he were available.
All right, day two. I got three for sure in day two. I don't know if you want to add anybody to this, and you could talk me into a couple more, but Jatavion Sanders, Cade Stover, Theo Johnson, I have those three for sure in day two. You want to add anything to that, Simon?
Yeah, Ben Sinnott is an absolutely rock solid day two pick. You know, he's 6'4", he's 255 pounds, he's hugely versatile, highly translatable skill set. Would not be surprised to hear him go in round two. He's just a really good player. He does everything that you want him to do in terms of catching, blocking, excellent hands. He can play in line as a Y, as a move tight end, as a slot, as an H back, as a fullback. He was motioned in and out of the formation a lot. He takes on five techniques. He's athletic with the ball in his hands, and he does things after the catch that make a difference. Chris's point is absolutely right, though. It's a declining position in terms of its usage. And you look at, you know, the two best tight ends of a generation, not called Rob Gronkowski, but, you know, Travis Kelce and George Kittle. George was a fourth round pick. Travis was a third round pick. So, you know, I think Sinner is a very interesting player, but I would absolutely add him to the mix as well. I you could probably, given some of the buzz, Jared Wiley of TCU might be a guy that fits into that third round area. You know, a team might fall in love with the blocking of someone like AJ Barner, who's got really high upside as a receiver, and he's only 21 years of age. So, you know, I think those guys would be the ones that would, you know, you could look at. But I'd be shocked if Ben Sinnott doesn't go on the second day.
Chris?
I think I still think JT Sanders of Texas is, you know, is poised to go. If he's not the actual tight end number two, It's going to be pretty close to that, but I think that you know, just judging from the buzz around the league, and people who would be in the know, like, you know, Jim Nagy and Bob McGinn and so on, those types of people, the NFL are pretty serious about Jared Wiley of TCU. And when I watch him play, I can see why he's very attractive, and probably in years gone by, if the position weren't in such decline, I would be more excited about Jared Wiley, more excited about Theo Johnson, or even Cade Stover, you know, than I probably am right now. And that sort of is what leads me to believe, you know, frankly, I wonder if we're not going to see, after Brock Bowers, if we're not going to see another tight end go until the third round. And that very well may be the case, because you're trying at some point with the usage of the position and the way these guys play the game, and what you can really expect out of them, you're wondering what you're really shooting for on the high side with some of these players. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see another one go until the third round. But I do like Theo Johnson for that as a Y tight end. I do like Jared Wiley legitimately so. And I even like Cade Stover. And, you know, certainly JT Sanders is another one of those move tight end types who can block a little bit. I think they can all block a little bit, but you know, is the position continuing to be that, you know, that that much of a valuable position? That's the real question.
All right, and moving on to day three before we go to break, I got one guy. I'm not over the moon on this entire class, meaning when I get into day three, I'm really waiting for UDFAs, essentially. I'm saying, I don't know if I'll use a pick on this guy, but I would use a pick on this guy. Dalen Holker of Colorado State. I kind of see it with him. I'm going to ask more of you, Simon. Give me two day three guys you can see in a Miami Dolphins uniform.
I would say Eric Hall of Iowa, who's the Michigan transfer. He's a big Y. He's tough. He can play in line. I think there are some pretty significant injury issues, but the Dolphins have brought him in on a 30 visit. He had surgery, essentially what he described at the time as life-changing invasive spinal surgery in 2022, having had a back problem in 2021. He's tore his right ACL in October of last year, so he's kind of coming off an injury, but he has everything that you'd look for in terms of a sort of starting tight end down the road. Jim Nagy said that they had the same grade pre his ACL injury as the Senior Bowl scouts did on Luke Schoenmaker, our old friend Spunkmaker, who went in the second round to the Cowboys.
Whose highlight of the season was catching a touchdown pass that fell at the 1-inch line and cost them the division title at the time.
It was. I'll let Chris talk about Jaheim Bell. I'm a big fan of Jaheim Bell. Was when he was back in South Carolina, where he was, to all intents and purposes, a running back, really. I mean, a running back who, you know, played a little bit of H-back and stuff. But I'll let Chris talk about him. There's a guy I really like as an H-back prospect who, if you're looking for that kind of Deebo Samuel guy, I mean, he's 6'1", he's 223 pounds, so he's undersized. This is Marshall Martin, the fifth of Sacramento State. He's an FCS All-American, a converted running back. He was injured for most of 2023, so kind of is buzzless. He's undersized, but he's hugely effective. He's speedy. He is a high-volume pass catcher. He's an FCS Jatavion Sanders, if you like. You go back to look at his 2022 tape, and he is going to stick his foot in the ground with the ball, and he will turn into a running back. He will bounce off guys. He will outrun defenders. He will lower the shoulder and deliver hits. He's got that Deebo Samuel mentality after the catch. He's got speed. He's got burst. He was measured at 21 miles an hour on GPS. He's got great hands. He's extremely competitive. I think he will be a very interesting prospect in terms of somebody taking him late on as a kind of an H-back slash big receiver slash special teamer slash get the ball in his hands and see what he can do kind of thing, and if he isn't selected, he will be a sought after UDFA, just as somebody you get in camp and just think with a creative offensive mind, what can I do with a kid like this? In years past, we'd have referred to them as tweeners, and he's kind of falling between the falling down the back of the sofa kind of thing. But I like him. I think he's an interesting player, and they would probably be the two guys I'd point out. All has, upside, but there's some significant injury history, and Martin's just a good football player.
Chris, two day three
Well,
guys.
I wouldn't be surprised if the entire position, with the exception of Brock Bowers and maybe two other guys or something like that, end up on day three. So I mean, I think that picking out just a couple of day three guys is tough. But Jaheim Bell, as Simon mentioned, that's one of the first guys that stood out to me. 6'2" and 240 plus pound guy who plays a lot. Like, I mean, the person he reminds me of the most is actually a wide receiver, is AJ Brown of Philadelphia. He plays with a lot of that movement and that sort of that angriness that AJ Brown has in the way that he plays ball, the physicality. I
Yeah,
think that Jaheim
he
Bell.
creates space. He makes space for himself when
Yeah,
as a pass catcher.
absolutely. And Jaheim Bell does quite a bit of that. I mean, I think that it's interesting. You go back to South Carolina, where he's playing running back last year. He's played wide receiver there. He's played wildcat quarterback, which, by the way, that was something Travis Kelce used to do at Cincinnati. He's done a lot of different things all over the field. And out at wide receiver, I mean, there's a borderline first, second round corner, Kamari Lassiter of Georgia, but you can find him running a wide receiver, kind of go route against Kamari Lassiter, burning him and catching a big ball that way, and just single man coverage, and that's and this is as a tight end. I mean, I think that that's very attractive. I think that he is by far one of the better, best run after catch, tackle breaking kind of guys that you've seen. After his rack skills is one of the best guys that you've seen in years. One of the most effective that way. And yes, he's undersized. Yes, the position is in decline, and yes, it is tougher now to find the excuse to use kind of a move tight end, a roll tight end. Even two tight end sets, like 12 personnel, are not really all that popular in the NFL. And so, yeah, it's tough to get super high impact. But at the same time, the NFL is starting to lean toward more slot receivers who aren't your tiny Braxton Berrios types. They're starting to get bigger in the slot. And so that's where I think that Jaheim Bell could start to make a little bit more sense as like a power slot. Somebody, I mean, listen, bottom line is he is 240 pounds. He can block you. He can go up and be physical. But then he also, has a little jitteriness like a wide receiver. He has some explosive qualities. I think he's a really good player. He's just one of those guys you watch play football and you're like, I just want that on my team because I think that I'm going to win because he's going to make, a big play here or there, regardless of whether we're talking about, an elite type player at 1,200 yards or something like that. I don't think we're talking about any of that for any of these guys anymore. But Jaheim Bell's definitely one of them. Aric All is another one, just because he moves very attractively like a wide receiver, and yet he is. I didn't think he was actually that big, but he is that big. He's 250 pounds. He's, a 6 foot, 4 or 5, something like that. He moves attractively. I didn't like his blocking at all at Iowa. And I guess that there must be some other tape out there that other people are saying that he blocked well in, because it's not what I saw. But then again, you know, how important is that if he ends up being sort of like your big slot receiver? Tip Ryman is the last guy probably I'd mention. And that's from Illinois, just because he's 270 pounds and athletically profiles like a Rob Gronkowski, one of those guys. There are really only so many of those guys that notch 270 pounds that, you know, run and have the athleticism that Tip Ryman has, the strength that he has. I mean, you've seen him. He's an inconsistent blocker, but he has high potential as a blocker. And then if you watch the way that he moves and the pad level that he can get, and also the way that he can adjust on the football in the air, I think that it all looks pretty attractive. And I think that he could be a winning player. But, you know, the more and more we go on about this, the more I'm coming to the conclusion that we have actually a lot of guys here that can play in the NFL. They will keep the machine working, but they're probably just not going to go very high because that's the nature of the position now.
All right. And we will go to break. And when we come back, we will talk offensive line. But first, these words.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge, and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that business homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so premier kitchen, bath, and laundry cabinetry, countertops, and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or, do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at wcufl.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 5-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
And we're back. Simon, do you have it on hand? Or I know you've been working on your draft book, and at the end of the show, we will have you plug that. And how are you going to be able to obtain one of these books in the very near future? One way, of course, is to get on OnlyFans, and you could get on there at discord.gg/OnlyFans. And we will make it much, much easier for you to purchase that book there. Or you can become a member and vetted and make it much easier then. But do you have this information offhand? Do you know what the record is? Because I don't. I don't know. What the record for offensive tackles in the first round is?
I don't off the top of my head, no. Yeah. I'm sure I can find out. But
When we get off the air, if you could, you know, I'm going to get my question in here. But if you could, when you get off the air, when we get off the air, I'm going to look this up. I got 7 in the first round, and I could talk myself into 8. I might be overdoing it, but I don't think I am. Alt, Fashano, Latham, Fuaga, Fontenot, Mims. And I'm thinking Morgan over Guyton, but maybe Kingsley Samoa could be the last one. I got 7 for sure. What do you have, Simon?
Yeah, I've got Alt, Fashano, Fatanu, Fuaga, Mims, JC Latham, Tyler Guyton, Sua Matea, as absolute, certainly all of them up to Sua Matea, definitely. Sua Matea, potentially. I would suspect that Amagaji would have been close had he not had the injury that made him miss most of the senior year. I don't love Jordan Morgan, I've got to say. I know people do love Jordan Morgan. I'm not a massive fan. I think Blake Fisher of Notre Dame is really, really good. And it wouldn't surprise me if he got close. And the other name that I hear a lot about, who I don't particularly love, but he's, you can kind of see why, is Roger Rosengarten of Washington. I've seen his name linked late first, early to mid second. But for me, I think all of those names up to and potentially including Kingsley Suamataya, who is just a baby at 21, just 21. He's Penei Sewell's cousin. Plays right tackle, plays left tackle. Those would be my guys. And then it depends what you think about Graham Barton as well, because is he a left tackle? Is he a guard? Is he a center? Where do you play him? His left tackle tape is extremely good generally. And I can't think there wouldn't be a single team out there who wouldn't think of him as a potential left tackle. So there's a good number of tackles that could, and it's actually split, Chris, isn't it? Pretty much, you look at Guyton is a right tackle, Latham is a right tackle, Mims has only played right tackle, Fuaga is a right tackle. It's split across, not just, these are not just all left-sided guys. These are guys that have played or play almost exclusively on the right side.
That's one of the things that makes it pretty unique as far as, pick your flavor. Because, as you suggest, Joe, and this is actually where we get into a conundrum, which is say you're picking what is it, the Chargers pick number 5 overall. And everybody's saying, Jim Harbaugh is very much an offensive line guy, and I do believe that. But Joe Alt being the top offensive tackle prospect, he's a left side guy. They have their left side guy already. They're not going to move Rashawn Slater, right? So would you move Joe Alt over to the right side? I don't think that makes a lot of sense. So it's like depending on where you're picking and what you need. On the other hand, if you're Miami, are you going to really go after a right side only guy if you just gave Austin Jackson, his big extension? And so, is J.C. Latham right side only? Is Talise Fuaga right side only? Is Amarius Mims or Tyler Guyton, are they really right side only? I suppose that's probably why the Dolphins have spent so much time with Tyler Guyton. Whether it's Butch Berry running him through his pro day stuff, or they're now it's come out that the Dolphins have done a top 30 visit with Tyler Guyton, and the reason is probably because Miami's need at the offensive line is very unique in that we're probably looking at a left tackle in 2025, but in 2024 we're probably looking at you as a guard, and Tyler Guyton is a right tackle. So what do we do with that? Can he really move to guard in the first year and then move to left tackle beyond that? Or can he play left tackle right away? It's really tough. And so I do like Jordan Morgan. I think you've got a top 8 guys, and then I'm not so sure about the rest of them. I understand that Kingsley Suamataya has a lot of potential and a lot of movement skills. He's actually tests out almost identically to his cousin Penei Sewell, from an athletic measurement standpoint. But I can't help but, every time I see him play, including at all-star performances, it just doesn't look very good to me. And so I do think that there is a top 8 with Jordan Morgan being the last of those guys. And beyond that, I think there's a bit of a gap. Personally, I don't think that there's much hope of Troy Faletano getting to Miami's pick. But if he were to get there, that's one of those guys that you kind of run up the card, that kind of player, I think. I think the same is true of Olu Fashanu. And I think, well, I don't know about running up the card, but you have to give some serious thought to Amarius Mims because you don't want to let a lot of other questions distract you from what you see on the tape. And what you see on the tape with Amarius Mims is a guy who could easily end up the best tackle of this entire class. Easily. You know, if he just stays healthy, like something as basic as stay healthy and just learn under good coaching, you know, that's, I mean, because he's not, you know, a guy that is going to always look underdeveloped, always look raw or something like along those lines. I think that he just could end up being the best tackle in the class, but he's going to fall because he has hardly any snaps. He does have like kind of the nagging injury histories and stuff like that. But, you know, if you got him, you're looking at a Jalen Phillips situation, except on offense, where it's just like, you know, this guy is going to be one of the best in the league, probably. If, you know, if he just has a nice normal one. and so, you know, it's a really good class. And I'd be very tempted if I'm Miami. But we've talked about this before. Will Miami actually be tempted? Do they even believe in this? Do they even believe in taking tackles and an offensive lineman this high? Do they think that rookies are coming in, you know, too far away from being able to contribute well at the offensive line positions, and that they'd rather just go with these bargain free agents on their second contracts and see what they can do that way? It's really tough to say. I know that what we would do, you know, I think all of us are begging for them to really inject youth and stability and talent on the offensive line. But it's really hard to say what Miami will do.
It's interesting to me, Alf, because, you know, obviously isn't going to get near Miami, and, you know, that's fine. Fashanu might do, and it feels like he's fallen, you know, a little bit in the eyes of some people, and maybe other guys have moved ahead of him. I think Fatanu will go above Fashanu, actually. It wouldn't surprise me if Fatanu went in the top 11 picks. Mm-hmm. I don't think he gets past that run in the middle of Seattle, Pittsburgh. And I think if he gets to sort of 13, 14, I think you might see somebody trading up to get him. The thing about Fashanu is that you can play him, you know, he is a left tackle, but you can probably play him at guard, but he's your future left tackle, okay? Fatanu, you can play inside at guard. You can play him, probably play him at right tackle. You can definitely play him at left tackle, obviously, and his left tackle tape is very good. Fuaga, similarly, he's a two-year starter at right tackle. You know, is he a left tackle? Is he a guard? I know some teams have talked about him as a guard. He's got short arms. You know, that's an interesting question. Mims is probably too big to play at guard. I mean, he's 6'8". Yes. You know, that is a tall guard clogging up your passing lanes. He has 8 career starts and a pretty significant, not major injury, but niggly injury issue. You know, he was injured in high school. He missed most of his sophomore year in high school with an ACL. He broke his wrist as a senior. He struggled with a knee issue in 2022. He had tightrope ankle surgery in 2023, missed multiple games, re-injured it again in the SEC championship game, suffered a hamstring strain at the combine. You know, these are kind of all these little things sort of add up and add up and add up. You know, 8 career starts all at right tackle. I mean, he's a phenomenally sized human being. It looks like he was built in a lab. JC Latham. Look, Latham was a highly recruited right tackle. They thought he was going to kick over to left tackle. He could absolutely be a guard. You know,
do you believe his hype, by the way? Drew Rosenhaus is saying he doesn't make it out of the top 10.
I don't think I don't think he's a top 10 pick, but then what happens if the Chargers decide that they don't want to play Joel at right tackle and somebody moves up to get whichever quarterback is, you know, let's say Arizona stay pat at 4 and take Marvin Harrison, and then you've got teams jumping up, whether that's the Raiders, the Giants, the Falcons, whoever, probably not the Falcons now because of Kirk Cousins, but the Vikings, you know, somebody trying to get up to that pick at 5, and you just take a first-round pick next year, move down, and then you know, Alt goes to Tennessee, and then you take Latham, you know, there to play him at right tackle to match opposite Slater. That would make sense. I don't think he's a pure non-trade top 10 pick, and his agent would say that, wouldn't he? But, you know, Guyton is another. Guyton is, you know, he might have the most upside of anybody in the entire class, quite frankly. I mean, Jim Nagy said that he has had scouts and general managers say that they remind, that Tyler Guyton reminds them of Tyron Smith coming out. You know, that's one of the best left tackles of a generation. Guyton is a right tackle, with left tackle skills, and the Dolphins have been all over him. Butch Barry went to the Oklahoma Pro Day, as Chris said. Tyler Guyton is now coming to Miami for a 30 visit. Can you play him at guard? He is also 6'7". He's almost 6'8". You know, that's the thing about Guyton, is that, and about Mims and Miami. Can you play them in week one of the regular season? And if you can't, and if you sit on them for a year, that has a massively adverse effect on a team that's got a win now mentality. And we've talked about this ad infinitum. But I just feel uncomfortable with taking these guys who are not going to contribute in year one. You can't have another year of mulligans with your first picks, whether that was a pick in the third round or a pick in the second round with Cam Smith. You can't have a first round pick just not making any contribution whatsoever. And I wonder, I think it's unlikely, but you know, let's say, for example, they do draft a Mims or a Guyton because they just can't afford to pass them up because of the long-term play with Teron Armstead. Would they contemplate moving Austin Jackson inside for a year and having, you know, one of these guys play at right tackle and Austin Jackson plays at left or right guard just for a year to then kick back out at right tackle when Mims slash Guyton move to left tackle after Armstead retires? I don't know. I just don't believe they can afford to have a guy sitting on the sideline doing nothing that they take at 21st.
I completely agree.
The counter there, Simon, is like, do we really expect Teron Armstead to play, you know, even half of the season's worth of snaps?
Sure.
But
are you going to put Amarius Mims in at left tackle when he's never played a single snap at left tackle? He's only ever played 8 games full stop.
He hasn't played that many snaps at right tackle either. So, but you know, I think that for Amarius Mims, I do believe so. I don't necessarily think that's true of everybody, but he was a left tackle in high school. Bottom line, he didn't really even play that much at Georgia, and he's still quite young. So I think that. I don't think that there's a necessary, some guys, they have carved out their career on the right side and it's like, you know, it feels like they are a right side guy. I don't get that feeling with him in particular, but I do think that there's an opportunity for some, I mean, like we go back and we'll talk about in another episode, Leiatu Latu, right? Like, and you know, where he fits with the team. And if the Dolphins come to the season without, Jalen Phillips or Bradley Chubb for any length of time, then clearly Leiatu Latu is going to play a lot opposite Shaq Barrett in those first couple of games before those guys are healthy. But what happens when Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips are back and Shaq Barrett is still here? Shaq Barrett, you know, with the $10 million contract or whatever he has. Then, you know, Leiatu Latu is the fourth edge, and the fourth edge, like, let's say that Chubb and Phillips are actually ready by week one. Then your fourth edge is looking at maybe like 200 to 300 snaps, because that's, you know, that's just the way that rotation happens.
And he's going to have to play special teams. Do you want Latu playing special teams?
Right. And then, but think about conversely on the offensive line with the guy, like, let's just say Amarius Mims, who you decide to be Teron Armstead's handcuff, right? The guy that slides in for Armstead, you know, as Armstead only plays like 50% of the snaps, that guy's going to play more than Leiatu Latu would. You know, if you bite the bullet and you have that player, whether it's Troy Fautanu or somebody else, be that primary backup to Teron Armstead instead of Kendall Lamb, who they signed back, but you know, they signed him back for a very low level contract, let's be honest. You know, I think there's every reason to believe that person would get snaps this year, just because you don't really think Teron Armstead is actually going to play a lot of football this year. I mean, he played 50% of the snaps last year, and it kind of felt lucky to get that. So yeah.
Watch this be the year where one of those guys drops to Miami and then Teron Armstead is suited up for 17.
That would be the most annoying thing that could happen, therefore guaranteed.
All right, one last thing before we move on, because we're a little bit pressed for time. We have to get to interior offensive linemen. One last thing. If I had a, I've said this before, a defensive back blog, I would call it Searching for Aqib Talib. My offensive tackle blog would be called Searching for Christian Darrisaw, because I really liked him. I heard you, Simon, you don't like Jordan Morgan. I kind of see you like Christian Darrisaw as a player, by the way. And
yeah,
course, you don't see it with Jordan Morgan?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of injury issues. I think he kind of looks
apart. Just like Christian Darrisaw.
His arms are really short. I mean, they're less than 33 inches. I think he's kind of solid. I think he's a bit unspectacular. But then, you know, one sack allowed in two seasons worth of true pass sets. And that stuff matters. But I didn't like his tape. I appreciate his skill set. I just wonder whether or not he's better suited to kicking inside. I didn't love him, I've got to say. I didn't love him. The one name that I think is worth bearing in mind when it comes to the Dolphins, and I certainly know, I don't know how you feel about him, Alf, but I certainly know that Chris and I are not fans, is Patrick Paul of Houston.
No, I was wondering this because I gave him a second and a third and a fourth look. I really like Walter Rouse. And then I really do believe Lance Zierlein, and I believe his rankings. I looked at Dane Brugler's rankings as well. And they essentially think I'm a complete clown because they got Patrick Paul as a day two second round guy. And they got Walter Rouse. Both of them have Walter Rouse as a sixth round pick. And I'll tell you what, I'd rather use a fifth or a sixth round pick on Walter Rouse than using a second or a third round pick on Patrick Paul. I just don't see it. And I understand Rouse, he was a successful tackle in college. I understand that.
I got Rouse as a right tackle convert and a solid day three pick. I think Paul obviously has, you know, he's got 2,950 snaps at left tackle, and he has got built in the lab size. You know, he's 6'7", 333 pounds. He's nasty. He can overwhelm defenders, but I think his technique is all over the place. And I think you're going to have to pretty much break down that technique and rebuild it before you could let him on an island in the NFL. Look, he's got an 86-inch wingspan. He's got 36-inch arms. You know, there is clearly a ceiling here because of that natural kind of God-given attributes that he has. And that's the sort of shit, we all know that's the sort of shit Chris Greer falls in love with. These kind of, you know, you can't teach what he's built with, but it's all very inconsistent. And I wouldn't touch him until the fourth round, but I bet he goes significantly earlier than that.
All right. Closing out the tackles. Give me three best of the rest. Day three guys. I struggled with this. I thought Doug Nestor a little bit had a look, but I think he could be a UDFA type guy. Yeah.
I like him. There's a kid at Georgia State called Travis Glover, who's 6'6", 338. He is a sleeper, a serious sleeper. He's a five-year starter, played both tackle spots, played left guard. He's got some serious power. He's got long arms. He's got really good feet. And he's got strong, patient hands. He understands leverage. He's a team captain, started 57 games, has only missed one game in 5 years with injury. He's had 11 top 30 pre-draft visits, which kind of tells you, you know, and when you see the names like Cowboys, Eagles, Patriots as teams who have had him in on top 30 visits, that, you know, when you look at Jeff Stoutland, the influence of Dante Scarnecchia, Cowboys obviously drafting really well on the offensive line, that kind of gives you an idea of those sorts of things. There's a kid at UCF, and I know Chris has watched some UCF games, reminds me a bit of Titus Howard, this kid Tylan Grable. He's a former quarterback turned walk-on tight end turned left tackle, and he's only ever played left tackle for 4 years, but he's got some serious athleticism. His arms are a little bit short, just under 34 inches, but he's a really, really light mover, as you'd imagine a former tight end would be. FCS All-American. He ran the fourth fastest time for an offensive lineman at the combine with a 4.96. He's an interesting player. And then a kid at Maryland, Delmar Glaze, who I thought was, you know, hasn't had a lot of love nationally, but more than 2,000 snaps at left tackle under his belt, only five sacks in true pass sets. He's balanced. He's got good grip strength. I think he's starting material at tackle, and I thought he played well at the Senior Bowl.
Chris, anything to add before we move on to the interior offensive line?
No, I'll just chime in. I think Tylan Grable of UCF is the one to watch there. But honestly, I don't like very many of these tackles below below we start talking a certain level. And that's kind of what I was getting at before. There's some big gaps. And that's, so I think aside from Grable, you know, I might have some interest in Ethan Driscoll of Marshall, but you know, it's sort of an eyeball test thing. I know he's not a high performer. Frank Crum of Wyoming, you know, obviously tested really well. And drew some attention to himself that way, but obviously in drills he looked quite a bit more rough. But you know, is he a mold of clay that you could start to really see round into shape in year three, you know, of his career, year four, something like that. That's basically all you could hope for here.
Alf, let me just give you one more name. Okay, it's a completely left field name. This is a guy called Bayron Matos, who plays at USF. He moved from the Dominican Republic to the US age 16 to play basketball, and then went to play for New Mexico and USF on the hardwood. Walked onto the USF football team in 2022, then was essentially drafted into the NFL's international player pathway, first as a defensive end and then switched to left tackle. Now, I have not seen him play, but he plays left tackle. He played left tackle at IMG and is part of the player pathway. He is a first off the bus. He is 6'8", 292 pounds. He runs a 4.7 40. Scott Pioli says that he has the kind of the raw skills in terms of like rare punch explosion, rare footwork. And Scott Pioli thinks he might get drafted on day three, a little like Jordan Mailata, in terms of somebody who just has monstrous upside, incredible movement skills, great height. He entered the transfer portal and had significant interest last year, but decided instead to go to the IPP because of his background coming from the Dominican Republic. He didn't speak a word of English when he came to the US. He literally taught himself. He taught himself by going to Chick-fil-A and sitting there and reading the menu and typing in phrases and building a kind of a repertoire. So he can't talk about shifting line calls, but he can tell you whether or not he wants a chicken burger and chips. But this is a kid that has some serious upside. And if Scott Pioli says he thinks he might hear his name called on day three, then that's certainly a guy to keep an eye on.
All right. That's certainly one way to learn the language. That's pretty cool. All right. I don't suspect that there's going to be a run on these in the first round. Maybe Graham Barton. I think that's a safe bet. Graham Barton will go in the first round. I don't know if there will be a second. But let's say it's in Miami's plans to have an interior offensive lineman with either 21 or 55. If they don't come out of this draft with either Graham Barton, Christian Haynes, Christian Mahogany, JPJ, Jackson Powers Johnson, maybe even possibly even a Zach Frazier. Although, you know, I think Miami hit with this free agency signing of Brewer. I think he's going to be really good. But if they don't come away from this draft with one of those guys, and I rattled off five guys, which is reasonable to target for 55, is it a failure? Because I could lump in the rest into one giant group. And we can nitpick to the cows come home, and they're all essentially late day two, early day three guys. Your thoughts, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned the guy there. I mean, Barton, versatile technician, mean, short arms, really good left tackle. Left guard, probably Christian Haynes. You talk about 4-year starter, 49 straight games. He's a stud right guard in his own schemes, quick, aggressive. The guy that nobody talks about because he had a double leg break in November is Zach Zinter. Of Michigan. I heard Mel Kiper the other day saying that he thought Zinter was still, he was talking to teams and said, you know, late two, early three. He is mean and nasty and great FBI football intelligence. Start week one if he's healthy. I don't love Cooper Beebe, but he plays like he's pissed off with every single person in a different color jersey. He's a bit stiff. But then, you know, you look at the athletic testing that he did at the combine and, you know, that's where it makes you go back and look at the tape a little bit because he performed really well at the combine. There's a kid at Kansas, Dominic Puny. He had no FBS or FCS offers out of high school, played 4 years in the Mid-American Intercollegiate Athletic Association at Central Missouri, transferred to Kansas, played a season at left tackle, a season at left guard. He is fast and precise and heavy-handed. I think he's an absolute lock for day two. I've seen Jim Nagy, heard Jim Nagy talking to my friend Rob Staton about him the other day. Lots of teams talking about him in that day two areas. AJ Epenesa's cousin, Mahogany, you talked about, and then obviously you go to center, and it's Jackson Powers Johnson, the guy that I think is. To me, he's the number two center in this class. And I know Chris is a big fan of Cedric Van Pran Granger and Tanner Bortolini. Matthew Lee of Miami
Yeah, that's my guy.
is. I watched him on tape and I just went back and watched him. And I thought this. I ended up watching five or six Miami games. And God, that was hard. But sorry.
They weren't very
He.
good, Simon,
No,
last
they
year.
weren't. But he is. I mean, he has a lot of good tape, and I have him over Zach Frazier. I have him over Van Pran Granger. I think he played, 47 starts. He is a little bit undersized. He's 301 pounds, but technique-wise, he's so quick off the ball. He plays with great pad level. He gets up on the outside shoulder of the defensive tackle. He rolls his hips through contact. A combo block guy, he's great in space. Yes, he can struggle a bit against, the really big DTs where he can't anchor. But you go back and watch him play. Like the two Clemson defensive tackles, I think are really, really good. Ruke Ohoro, I can't even pronounce it properly. Oh ho ho ho, ho. Sounds like Scooby Doo whenever you say it. You know the guy I mean, and Tyler
Okoroko.
Davis.
I think
Yeah,
it's Okoroko.
no, it's not. It's
Is it?
Ruke. Or, ho,
Orokoro.
yeah,
No?
anyway, him
You'll
and
know it
Tyler
when you see
Davis.
it, dear
I
listener.
thought he was excellent against those two guys. And you're always looking for those kind of battles where, Jared Verse against Graham Barton was a great one. And that's the sort of thing you're really looking out for. And I thought the way he played the Clemson DTs was really, really interesting. And I thought he had a really good day. And, he's not going to fit. He's obviously not a power scheme guy, but as a zone scheme guy, he is. I was very, very interested. Ruke Oroho, 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 Scooby Doo.
I want to hear who's gonna do that in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. But those are the kind of the interior guys that I like. There's a couple of like small Mason McCormick at South Dakota State I like, and then there's a dude who looks like he's an extra from Game of Thrones, Chris. I don't know if you've seen him, Bucky Williams from Appalachian State. He's got long ginger hair and this big ginger beard, but he's an interesting kind of day three pick as a tough and nasty right guard. He's got 4,000 snaps under his belt. He's got some fun tape. He shoves guys around, and he is he sells t-shirts that say you got bucked on them, but he apparently people's
That's pretty
apparently
cool. Yeah,
yeah
but
he's a nasty little yeah he's 6'2", 298, but he's got some fun tape.
yeah, before we get you in here, Chris, yeah, I completely agree. I posted about him on OnlyFans a couple of months back. I called him my favorite Miami prospect, and this is a draft that has Cam Kitchens, who is almost damn near consensus by the mocks, gonna be a day two guy. I'll add one. His line mate, Javion Cohen, maybe a UDFA type, maybe a sixth round pick, but he likes football. He likes running and hitting people, kind of a bully, and has ideal size as a guard at 6'4", 325. I like Javion Cohen. He has a look. Chris.
Heavy-handed guy.
Yes.
I think that Graham Barton, up at the top is going to be, I think I've seen him compared a little bit, and I see it a little bit to Joe Tooney, and what he can do from the guard position as far as, being an elite player at that position. So I am a buyer there of him. There's a lot of versatility. Actually, I get a little nervous about him at that center because we haven't seen him there in years. And, last time we did see him there was as a freshman, and it's not exactly as if he was, killing anybody at that point in his development. But yeah, I think he's a legit first rounder. I think that Jackson Powers Johnson Those two guys, left guard, right guard, respectively, probably the only two guys that I have a lot of faith coming in and playing the guard position really well, not just for a rookie, but actually playing average to even maybe above average for a starter as rookie players. I think that Zach Frazier, I am a buyer of him. I think that his tape looks good to me. I think that he fits in the way that he plays, the style that he plays. I think he fits a lot of the zone schemes that are going on in the NFL. Now, obviously, Miami runs kind of an extreme version of that zone scheme, and hence they signed probably the most mobile and explosive center in all of football in Aaron Burr, and I'm not exaggerating. So, you know, maybe you wouldn't say that Zach Frazier is the best for Miami's particularly extreme version of the scheme, but I think that it's so popular, this scheme in the NFL right now, that Zach Frazier is going to be very coveted. I think he is going to go. I think his play strength is really good. I've heard Duke Manyweather talking about him. He is a huge, huge fan, thinks that he's the best center in the draft, bar none. And so I think that he's good. Christian Haynes is just one of those guys. I love that he is, you know, it's not just that he's powerful and strong and explosive, but same with Christian Mahogany as well. These guys can move. Yeah. Christian Haynes and Christian Mahogany, both of those players can move, and when they test out well, you know, it's not a surprise. So I think those guys would be great at the guard position, probably more right guard, although Christian Haynes took some snaps at center in the All-Star game. Cedric Van Pran, I've heard Duke Manyweather talk about his football IQ. He's one of those players that can tell you every single person's responsibility on any given play and what the play is trying to do and what the defense is going to try to do to defend it. And he's one of those guys that sort of understands all aspects of the plays. And I think that's really coveted in the NFL level. So he is going to be a coveted center. I think that, with a year maybe or so of development, he's going to be a really good player for the NFL. Cooper Beebe, I share Simon's concerns on tape, and then, you know, confound it, he tests out as well as he does. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, what exactly did I see on tape that made me think that he is not a great mover? Because I don't know that he is a great mover. And I think that it's really just a very, for him, it's really just a very specific thing that he does not seem to do very well. I think when he's moving completely laterally in mirror drills, it looks pretty good, stuff that translates to pass pro. But then I think when he has to kind of, you know, turn a little bit and roll over and get on the move, that's when it starts to look not so good. And so I think that, you know, he just might be a very idiosyncratic type of prospect where it's going to look one way on paper, it's going to look another way on film, and everybody, it'll be eye of the beholder, but we'll see. Mason McCormick, obviously a really good player, but Tanner Bordellini is a really good center prospect. And I think that he should go on day two as a center prospect. I don't know if he will or not, but he's definitely a guy you can plug right in. I think he's a solid, got good length. He's very, very intelligent. He's very mobile. He tested, in elite areas athletically, and it wasn't really that surprising based on what I saw on tape. I like him a lot. I like Brandon Coleman of TCU a lot. He's going to be a guard, most likely, and I think that he's one of those guys that has the athleticism and the length to make a difference at the guard position. And nothing against Matt Lee at all. I do like him as well. I mean, I think that he's a good mobile center type. I'm not sure that I see, you know, the guy that blows me away, but I see the sort of mobile center that fits fits a lot of the systems. It's not just Miami's system in the NFL. I think everybody's kind of looking for that guy now. So yeah, there's a good interior class here. I definitely see, you know, 10 guys or so that you know, would be very, I'd be very happy to have on my team. So that's pretty deep. That's pretty good. 10, maybe 12 guys. And I think that's a good class.
And Miami won't draft one of them.
No. They'll draft Hunter Norzad.
Yeah.
All right. One last thing before we get out of here until Thursday. I already gave mine, Javion Cohen. I like Matt Lee. I kind of like Drake Nugent as a UDFA, but man, he's small. Give me your under the radar guys. If you have two, that's great. If you have three, even better. Simon,
are these for the interior?
Interior day three late guys.
Isaiah Adams of Illinois. He was a JUCO transfer. He played right guard. He played right tackle. I think he could play center. I think he's probably a pure guard, though. When it comes down to, he's a mauler in the run game. He had 125 knockdowns in 2022. He's bendy. I think he's got sort of starter tape. He's an interesting guy. Giants have shown a lot of interest in him. He is a team captain both at Illinois in high school and at community college. Certainly as a guard. And then in terms of centers beyond the guys that I mentioned already, I think that who else is a D? I mean, I don't love the guard prospect, the center prospects. I'd say Kingsley Egukan of Florida, who missed most of 2023 because of an ankle injury. He is he's very quick off the ball. He's got great football intelligence, good base. He's balanced. He needs some play strength, I think, and he's had some penalty issues, 26 in the last 2 years, which is obviously going to be a problem, but he's perfect for his own scheme. He can mirror and match. He's twitchy, and he actually ended up going to the Senior Bowl, played right guard. He might lack the heft to be a starter. He originally committed to Miami as well, but yeah, he'd be a guard to keep an eye on as well.
Chris?
I think C.J. Hansen of Holy Cross is a guy that moves really well. He showed up. I mean, you're not going to watch very many Holy Cross games and you know, feel like you've come away with a good NFL evaluation on him. But he showed up at the combine. I like the way that he moved in his drills. I like the way that obviously he moved while he was testing. An interesting guy that I think plays at Duke and has played some center, played some guard, and is going to end up, I think he's going to end up starting some NFL games because I think he's been well coached and I think he's just a solid guy, but moves surprisingly well is Jacob Monk. So I really would watch out for him as like kind of a UDFA priority free agent type of player who, you know, kind of would surface in somebody's starting lineup. You know, maybe, I don't know if it'd be right away or down the road, but it's just kind of one of those surprising things. And this is one of those positions where that happens, right? You know, and so I think that, Drake Nugent, you brought up a good one. That's one that I looked at early because I heard that the Dolphins were onto him. And so I looked at him and I think that he's one of those, you know,
he's getting smaller every time they measure him. That's not a concern to you.
Well, the bad news on him is that, you know, he is small and he makes up for it by not being very fast. So, you know, let's get the bad news out there right away. But when you look at him play football, though, he's one of those guys that just does not waste movement. He's one of those guys that just plays stout, plays balanced, plays, you know, he plays it right. He plays the position really well. And he's maximizing everything that he's got, which is size-wise and athleticism-wise is not much, unfortunately. But sometimes it just gets back to, you know, the nature of this position. We think sometimes that we're drafting all these, you know, basketball stars and athletes, and then sometimes we forget that what we really need are guys that are not going to fuck up. Because, you know, forgive my language, because we're talking about 60 plays and your job as, you know, I guess as a preventer you know, is prevention, is if you have 60 plays, you can't really screw up on five of them. You know,
that is like, true. You're not hitting a baseball. Like if you have I thought about this once. If you could quantify a success rate for an offensive, like let's say a guard. If a guard is successful on 90% of his plays, he is terrible and should be out of the league.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing, and that's the old baseball line. If he what is it again? If he hits it like three out of ten times.
Yeah, baseball's the only thing in the world that you could fail 7 out of 10 times and you're great.
And you're great, you know, right? And I think that you know, as a guy who's on basically the disaster prevention team on offensive line, sometimes, you know, we do lose sight of the fact that what we need are guys that are not going to screw up and that are going to be consistent, as opposed to, you know, you look at I talked him up, and now I'm not necessarily talking him down, but you look at Amarius Mims and you're like, well, that guy, I just want that guy on my team, you know. And at the same time, you're like, well, what about the guys that's going to give you, you know, 55 out of 60 plays of not screwing up? And then, you know, on five plays, yeah, he might get physically overwhelmed by somebody that's a little bit, you know, not a little bit, but one of these monsters that you see in the NFL that play defensive line sometimes. Anyway, when I see Drake Nugent, I'm kind of reminded of that. And when I see a Jacob Bunk, I'm kind of reminded of that as well. So I think that that's something to keep in mind. Although one last shout out, Donovan Jennings, just because I watched them play here in Tampa, South Florida football. Donovan Jennings is getting quite a bit of attention from NFL teams and visits there. And I think that he could be somebody to watch, maybe not for Miami, but somebody's going to be after him.
All right. And we're going to call it right there. We're inching toward the draft. We're, what is it? 10 days away. We are 10 days away from the draft, but we will hit you up again. We will be getting into defense the next time you hear from us, but till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.